CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life. With Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, as ever, Lionel Makokotlela. Welcome, Lions.
Dumela, Gary, and dumela to our guests and our listeners. And today I am going to get into trouble, and I'm looking forward to getting into detention for saying this. I'm in the company. It just feels like I'm in an intellectual orgy company.
Well, we'll hear very soon whether it's an orgy or not. Lines, our researcher today, Benji Scheinberg, and controlling the show, the pretty flower, Palesa.
Palesa, lelomo la bophelo la pelo ya rena. Re a go rata, sis.
Okay, today's show is about the magic of reading, and that our children need to read. Oh, that's what this show is about.
Yeah? Indeed, we need to really educate people to read. And who better to do it than our intellectual OG members?
Let's meet our studio guests today. Firstly, Chris Dykes. He represents the Bookshelf Project. Chris has an MBA from Wits Business School, where he was awarded one of the top student awards. Good on you, Chris. And
thank
welcome.
You. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Chris is joined by Nikki DeVette de Toy. She's head of operations for Field of Dreams Foundation. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Snuggled up next to Nikki is Martha Reholane. She's the principal, is it Lysonia? Lysonia Primary School in Pretoria, is it? Martha? Is your school in Pretoria?
Yes, it's in Pretoria.
Do you know the school, aren't you from that area?
Yeah, I do know the school.
Okay. Welcome to you, Martha.
Thank you.
Originally from Japan, and now living in South Africa, former head of Sony South Africa, Tadashi Hasanuma. Konnichiwa to you, sir.
Konnichiwa. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you. You've been with us before, but I love your project so much I had to get you back. And there have been developments and positive ones, which we'll talk about.
Oh, yeah. And remember, I actually did a roadshow with them one day for their visit to primary schools within the townships. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And the work that they're doing, it's really amazing. The buses are constantly in demand by the students, which just shows there is hunger for people to read and really educate themselves.
Yeah, we're looking for our kids to read as well, specifically our children today. On to top it all today, we have a lady by the name of Shelley Aronson. She's Deputy Principal Foundation Phase Crawford Prep School in Sandton. Shelley holds a Bachelor of Education Honours and a Master of Education, both, may I add, cum laude. Welcome to you, Shelley.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here.
Yeah, it really is. Our fabulous diverse array of guests today will be talking about how that for every child, a book is a dream that they hold in their hands, Lions.
Indeed. Nothing can really beat those words, because if you really teach a child to really use their imagination by reading, they will become something greater.
Each one of our guests today is in their own way, including me, passionate about helping a child expand his mind by becoming a reader.
Oh, yeah. And who better to do that than you, a very proactive father who actually has a beautiful son, and you constantly read and teaching him how to read.
Yeah, it's true, Lions, I do. Yeah. Our email address, law@cliffcentral.com. Let us know how you feel about our shows. We get some great feedback. Keep it going. We appreciate it. Our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Lions, we can be tweeted on
@HertzLaw. HERTZLAW. And if you really want to contribute anything, you can do so by touching base with us. And thank you so very much for downloading our podcast, because we have actually seen an improvement in the downloads, by the way, Gary.
Yeah, please join the Cliff Central family on that note, Lions, and be one of those to have downloaded the millions of podcasts off the Cliff Central site.
This is the future of radio.
This is
the future of communicating with communities.
Absolutely.
There we go.
Gareth Cliff, who heads up, together with Rena Broomberg, we have great heads of this station, and we're very proud to be part of it. So get the podcast. Let's talk firstly to a man called Chris Dykes, who represents the Bookshelf Project. As I said, you have an MBA from Wits Business School, and you were awarded one of the top student awards. You said, Chris, and I just want to check it with you, I think you said 3 in 10 South African learners are in classrooms without a library or reading corner, which puts our children at a terrible disadvantage when it comes to literacy and educational opportunities. A dismal stat. Is that in fact so? Is it so? Or is it getting better?
Well, we get our research from the press and from local, Stats SA and that type of thing, but for me, what's more important than the generic stats is the state of so many of the schools that we engage with, where most of the kids are struggling with their reading. Most of the kids are certainly not where we would like to see them. Mm. And that's what makes our project so exciting, in that when we see the kids embracing their books, holding on to them, starting to look at some of the pictures, starting to engage, starting to realize that a world of adventure, a world of love, a world of romance, a world of story, a world of imagination is between these covers, and they lose themselves in those covers and in the process start to build their life skills. That for me is the key.
Okay, well, tell us about the wonderful work that your project does, the Bookshelf Project. What are you up to?
Okay, so a couple of years ago, we were involved in a project with Rotary, just as a volunteer. And at the center, there was probably 60 or 70 kids working in, living in a really poor area around Johannesburg. And there was a couple of crayons in the back of this container that it was the home, where these kids would come in the afternoon, and nothing else. And so one of the things that the center manager said to us is they needed was a bookshelf. And they ran out of money, so we got a couple of friends together and we built a bookshelf for these guys. And by the time we put all the books into the shelf, there was probably more bookshelf than books.
Yes.
And so we I woke my girlfriend up the next morning at sort of 4 a.m. and said, "Listen, we need to go and find books." And we got a whole bunch of people together and we packed this bookshelf full. And I think one of those defining moments in life was one of the young ladies at the center approached me afterwards, and she was holding on to this book. I actually get quite teary thinking about it. She was holding on to a book as though it was a child. And she said to me, "You know, I'm so grateful. And this means so much to me because I've never owned a book before in my life."
Mm.
And that...
Touching,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. It was huge.
Mm.
As it was, she's now done very well at school, and... You know, it's really cool to see the changes in her life. But certainly, we initiated the project as a result of that interaction, really. And for a couple of years now, we've been going to multiple schools, including Crawford, who's here today. And we basically stand up in front of their assemblies and say, "Listen, guys, the books that you don't want anymore, the books that you finished reading 2 or 3 years ago, give them to us. Because we have the capacity to firstly collate the books, to sort them out, to make sure that the books are age appropriate. And then we build bookshelves and we donate the bookshelves through to township schools, farm schools, etc., where there is no infrastructure." And the amazing thing is that our project is sponsored through social development programs. Companies use their socioeconomic development funding to make the project work. And really, what we're able to do is take a resource and then multiply it multiple times over in the value that's created. So a massively exciting project.
Yeah. One of the schools that you've become involved with is one of the schools that has a wonderful headmistress.
headmistress,
and it's Martha. Martha, you met Chris some years ago.
I've met Chris 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And then he donated lots of books to the school, and before we didn't have anything until Chris came to the school. Then that's how we had a vision that someday we can own a library. Chris donated books which were relevant to the children, especially the level of books and the age also, and the books were very much colorful. At the school, we're struggling with learners who can't read and write.
Well, let's talk about your school. It's called the Laizonia, L-A-E-Z-O-N-I-A Primary.
Yes.
You have over 1,000 pupils.
We have got 1,060 kids at the school.
1,060?
Yes.
How many kids per class?
Plus or minus 56 or 57.
Mm. It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's overcrowded.
It's overcrowded. There were no books for leisure reading. I know you get textbooks, you told me, but
yes.
For leisure reading, there was nothing.
There was nothing.
So the kids have no way of expanding their mind beyond the few textbooks that they get in class.
Only what the teacher can do to them in the class can teach them. That's what's it. They couldn't explore, they couldn't experience anything until Chris came with those books. Then learners were able to go to the, even though it wasn't a proper library, they were able to go to the so-called library by then to read those books that Chris has donated to the school.
Let's talk about your school. I know at one stage it was condemned by the authorities and was actually shut down. And it was opened, I think, before you came along in 2014. And hundreds of mostly destitute children were the children that attended your school, or may still do. Is that kind of accurate?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Apparently, Lines, I don't know if you know about it, the ramshackle and rundown classrooms were intended to accommodate 640, and now they've got twice that.
Yeah.
So this is tough. It's a tough what's going on there, and you're trying to do your best to pull it right. And I think you've done a great job according to reports.
Thank you.
Yeah.
She is very much trying, but I think though the other thing that we also need to really touch base on is the level of involvement by parents to actually be proactively involved in the schools so that they can actually add a little bit of value. But more importantly, also the Department of Health, Education must actually play a role in terms of making sure that there are mobile classes available, just so that at least pupils, or rather, can actually get attention in terms of them being assisted by teachers, because really 60 pupils in a class, it's going to be too much to really sort that out.
Yeah, I mean, we're all nodding here. We have, you know, I know my little boy is in a private school and he has 20 odd kids in his class, and I'm blessed to be able to send him there because he gets individual attention and good attention. It's very hard with over 50 kids in a classroom to give them the attention they deserve. We all know that, and we all kind of shake and shiver and say, you know, but for whatever, I would be there. But you're still trying to make a difference, and people like Chris are making that difference, and that's why we want to run this show. You are bringing books into that school that they would never, ever see in their lives. Marvelous. Give us an idea of what kind of books you bring in.
Okay. Just before we talk about what the books are and what our intention is, if I can just also emphasize the point within the space that Martha's operating, is that the kind of school that you're sending your kid to, most of the parents are going to be literate, most of the parents are going to be excited about reading themselves, and are going to be facilitating the development of that child after the school. So you've got the amazing infrastructure that exists in the school, and then you've got the support network afterwards. For many of the kids at Martha's school, their parents are illiterate, and they're not consciously or actively, should we say, driving literacy in their own personal capacity.
Yeah.
Many of them because of their circumstances, many of them because they're getting home 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night after having taken a taxi for a couple of hours every single day. And so the kids are at a sort of double disadvantage, if we can say that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that inspired me about Martha when we first started speaking was that she opens her school up earlier in the mornings than required to do extra reading sessions, which I find inspiring. And you know, so many of the kids that are struggling actively attend these sessions and make the time and the effort to get there early.
Mm.
So truly, truly extraordinary.
Yeah. Shelley Aronson of Crawford, do you want to chip in now, or do you want to wait for? We'll hold Shelley. She's passionate about schooling and reading. She's got so much to help us with.
Okay.
Martha.
Okay, I just want to add something on what Chris just said. The commitment that I'm getting from the staff of Laizonia, it's really huge, because normally by 7 o'clock, every teacher is at the school so that they can assist kids, those who can't read, I mean, who can't do homeworks. Mm. So, and it, because of the challenges that the parents are facing, not knowing how to read and write, but at the end of the day, we have got morning lessons and afternoon lessons, and then that's where lots of kids are benefiting.
Yeah, well, it's a credit to you as the principal. And I think we must acknowledge that. Otherwise, you could also, you know, come in at 8 o'clock and the kids would not benefit. True. So they say the fish stinks from the head or the fish grows from the head. And in your case, it's the latter.
Yeah. Oh, certainly. But it also just shows the level of commitment from the leaders. And for that, madam, we just want to say thank you. We salute people like yourself. And we need more of teachers like you who are actually going to be proactive. And I hope that the parents can also come on board and really take part in this whole initiative, because it's a beautiful initiative and it's going to change the country as a whole. Keep up the good work. And we really, really appreciate that from the bottom of our hearts.
Yeah, very well said. Lines. Each bookshelf is costing 900 rand or more today, Chris. Who's funding this? How do you cope with this?
Okay, well, first of all, the question that you asked about the type of books that we collect, we don't want to get books in that are more of the same kind of textbooks that the guys have at school already, well, in most instances.
You want them to relax, don't you, and expand their minds.
Absolutely. I mean, really, the vision of the bookshelf project is to inspire a love of reading. Mm. And the only way we're going to do that is by putting enough books into every bookshelf that most of the kids or all of the kids are going to have books that meet their interests. And so there's a combination of novels, young readers, young adult readers, right the way through to even your hardcover paper books that your sort of youngsters would use. Mm. And then a selection of easy access reference books. So fossils, for example, or picture books of what South Africa is like, what the Kruger National Park is like. Mm. And so some of the kids are a little bit more academic, some of them a little bit more interested in sort of theory and not just getting involved in a love story.
Yeah.
But it's the combination of books that are selected for the age levels of the schools that we donate to that I think brings the bookshelf alive and makes the magic happen.
Yep. There's another great project that's taking place at the same time, and it's run by a man who used to head up Sony South Africa, which is a very big position. You came to South Africa, nearly 20 years ago, Tad. I call you Tad, yeah.
Yeah, I came here in 1998 to start Sony South Africa.
And you still live in South Africa?
Oh, yeah. I worked for Sony about 6 years, and after I retired in 2004 from Sony.
Yes.
But seeing the the level of the people's literacy, or like they're able to calculate or able to read, sometimes it's not yet to the standard of society. Mm-hmm. So lots of people could not have a job. So which means to say for society, we are losing the opportunity of businesses. If people don't earn money, they can't buy even the Sony products. So that was my initial thought. And we Japanese always read and write things. Mm-hmm. We are not something and black people. They love to sing songs and dances. We Japanese love read and write. And it's a kind of common sense for Japanese people to read the books.
Yeah.
And South Africa, about 90% of schools do not have school libraries. Mm. And this is a big handicap for even today's younger children to become literate. And without being able to read and write, coming to the working society, they may not be able to get a job.
So let me explain what Tad has gone and done. It's a fascinating project. Mm. When I first heard about it, I thought, is this for real? And it is for real. So let me try and explain very simply. In Japan, they have these mobile libraries that go around in buses. There are 500-600 buses at any one time, and these buses get replaced after a certain usage and a very low reading on the mileage. So I think after about 20 to 60,000 Ks, they replace the buses. I think they can in Japan because they're made in Japan and they made cheaply in Japan and they want the best. So Tad came with this idea. He said, hold on a second, what are you doing with the old buses? The old buses that are really, we would regard as kind of new buses, but to them in Japan, they're old. So he's brought them in, and they export these dozens of buses into South Africa at someone's cost. Who's paying for the export to get the buses here?
I have to find a lot of sponsors.
You got to find sponsors.
Yeah, I'm knocking the doors here and there to get the money to raise a fund.
Yeah.
In order to say export from Japan to South Africa.
So they come in mahala. They come in free, but you've got to pay for the charges to get them here. But you don't pay for the bus.
No. Normally, those buses, we call the book buses.
Yeah.
Belong to Japanese municipality offices in Japan. And after replacing the old bus, they may not need anymore.
Okay, so normally a mobile library bus is a 2 to 3 ton bus, and it's got a special library cabin equipped with bookshelves carrying up to 2 to 3,000 books.
That's it.
Okay. Now they arrive in South Africa, they stocked up with books, and we're going to find out where you're getting the books from. And then the Department of Education is giving you drivers to drive these mobile libraries around South Africa.
That's right.
And it's right through. It's not just one province. You've got them all over the place.
Basically, 9 provinces of South Africa received a donation of these buses. And fortunately, South African road regulation is almost similar to Japan. Right side handle, kilometer indication.
Okay.
So the good second hand, relatively younger, low mileage buses could be utilized. And the provincial department of education are supposed to make us, book services or library services to the children. But because of limits of funding and so on, they are battling to, have the libraries all over the school. So we donate these buses in exchange with their promises that they would look after the bus.
Do they? Do they look after the buses? They've got to maintain them. If they don't, you take them back. Lange, you've been on one of these buses. You went on a roadshow. Tell us exactly what happened.
Oh, no. What actually happens is that the buses, they get books from other colleagues all over the world, from Sony employees, who actually contribute the books that they actually don't want. And some of the books actually are the books that their children were actually reading. So they donate to this initiative. And then they are brought to South Africa. And once they are brought to South Africa, Mr. Ted sits with the team and start allocating the books accordingly to each provinces. And then the buses actually we went on a Wednesday or Thursday, where we actually had to go to Johannesburg, the east side of Joburg, where he was actually going to schools within a particular area, from one area to the next. And this school would actually allow children to get out and come to the buses to really collect books for themselves. And the interesting thing is just that it really introduces you to what a proper library looks like, because they've got a scanner, and you actually need to basically be responsible by bringing the book before D-Day. So those are just basically some of the initiatives that they actually brought to the table.
Yeah. Your organization is called SAPESI, SAPESI, which stands for South African something or other.
South African Primary Education Support Initiative.
Okay.
This is what we are trying.
Now, you are aiming in the next 10 years or so to cover 2,500 schools with 100 buses, which is a big task. But may the Lord keep you alive and bless you. This is going to happen. Yes?
I think I have to find somebody to help me or succeed me. But look, as far as the children are there, if they don't have a book, access to the books, I think we have to say organize these kind of things. The best is the whole school to have their libraries. Mm. But the remote area, smaller school, because of the limits of the budget, for time being, there might be spaces for the buses to go and deliver the books.
I know that at the end of last year, which is 2016, the Sony Group of Companies based in Singapore donated 9,600 English children's books, and it was handed over to the Northwest Provincial Department. I mean, that's stunning. That's marvelous. That amount of books. There's some really good people that are in this country, like yourselves, like everyone in studio today. It's just unbelievable to think that the generosity is just so overwhelming here.
Most first-class countries, they know the value of the education and value of the readings. And when we explain to the those countries, people like USA, Japan, or Singapore, or UK, that the children of Mr. Mandela needs a books, then everybody says,
Mr. Mandela.
Yeah, it's a magic word.
It is so, a magic word, yeah.
And, you know, we got lots of donation of books. And, one of the shipping company named K-Line, Japanese shipping company, offers us free containers to hand carries. So there are lots of supporters behind this mobile library activities.
Madiba would turn in his grave if he knew what was going on in Parliament. But if he saw what was going on here, he would really be proud of you. In his name as well, marvelous. Yeah. You've got 15 startup libraries with 500 books. And I think you've credited SA Taxi Foundation for assisting. Yes, did they?
One of the our sponsors is the SA Taxi Foundation, which gives us office space since 2 years ago. Up to then, our office is a Mug and Bean in Midrand.
Mug and Bean Midrand. Now you have an office.
We have lots of the sponsors like SA Taxi Foundations, MOL Shipping Company, even Japanese Ministry of Foreign Affairs helps us.
Can you and Chris kind of collaborate in any way? Chris, do you see yourself collaborating, or is it?
Well, we've just met, and I'm certainly inspired. And from our side of things, we've probably given away about 25,000 books so far. Talking about going overseas and using Mr. Mandela's name, I was in the UK last year, engaging with a number of schools there, and every single one of the schools that I connected committed to donating books. We're just getting the logistics right, which is proving to be a little bit more difficult than I had thought. But we're on the verge of getting it right. And from my side, I'll commit to donating a whole batch of books as best as I can.
Is there anyone, Tad, that you want to publicly thank, like any corporations, Sony and any others, that deserve credit for helping, financing, bringing the stuff in?
Oh, yes, there are a huge number of the companies, starting from like Sony and so on.
You can't bring in half price the old PlayStations for my little boy that I can.
It's a little arguable.
Okay, arguable.
You know, arguable. PlayStation may not help children's reading time.
I see you're accompanied by two groupies here today. I don't know, are they part of your organization, the two ladies in studio, or are they?
Yes. Yeah. Their husband are working in South Africa.
Okay.
So they are volunteering us to help.
They're helping us. Would you like to come forward, ladies, and talk to us? You okay? No, you're just happy listening. So you're getting people to assist now. It's getting bigger and bigger, this project.
That's right.
Yeah. We're going to break for a moment just to give us all a breather. When we come back, we're going to talk to Shelley Aronson from Crawford Schools. She's got a lot to say about reading aloud. We'll be right back. You're gonna have to do less for you. Tell mama you know how. So you're gonna need to do more than just. I'm Gary Hertzberg. We're back in studio with a marvelous group of giving people who are allowing our children to expand their minds. Wonderful. People like this do so much good in the background, and no one hears about it because no one's pushing it. That's why I'm raising these topics, Lance.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. You are one of the greatest. And I think the most important thing that we need to actually do is to really emphasize most of these people who are actually making a very profound impact in the children of our communities. Oh. And for whatever they're doing, we just want to salute you. You are the heroes and the heroines that South Africa needs, and with your help, and if we can really learn something from this wealth of wisdom that you have, we can really change South Africa for the better.
Shelley Aronson is Deputy Principal Foundation Phase Crawford Prep, one of the very, very enlightened schools and privileged schools, if I may use that, in Johannesburg. Shell, you're passionate about education, and you believe fervently, because we've discussed this, that reading that bedtime story aloud to a young child has a multitude of benefits. Talk to us about that, because so many parents aren't doing this.
Well, first of all, I'm humbled by sitting here amongst all these wonderful people. I'm amazed by the wonderful work that you are doing. Just keep on. It's absolutely fabulous.
It is fabulous, yeah.
Really. Yes, I am passionate about reading aloud, and I am passionate about education and reading in general. At my school, at the end of every day, the teachers take a book and they read in the foundation phase to the children every single day. And so children are being read to every single day. There's a wonderful lady, her name is Mem Fox. She is an Australian professor, and she wrote a book called Reading Magic. And she discusses as well the merits of reading aloud to children from a very, very young age. We are told that when we're bringing up children, we should converse with them and talk to them and engage with them from babyhood. And it's the same with books. Children are receiving language all the time. And how much better can they receive than the richness of language in the written form and being read to? So right from the very, very start, from very early on, people should read to their babies. They might not engage, but they are listening and they are receiving. And that is very, very important.
Yeah, it's lovely when you read aloud and your child says, what does that mean? And you can explain it and you can discuss it. I know it's a bit cliche, but it's so, as a parent, it's beautiful. And you know that he'll remember that word, or she will, and they're walking away with something more. That vocabulary is expanding daily. And I'm a father of a six-year-old, as I've said six times. I have so many friends who are in the same position that work late. It's hard for them to do homework, have supper, do homework. The travel time today is crazy. Can take you 2.5 hours to get home. They get home at 7:30. By the time everyone's had supper, everyone's too tired to do anything. The kids are packed off into bed, and that's it. It is unfortunate, really. It really is.
It is unfortunate, because there's nothing better than lying with your parent on the bed with a book between you and reading and sharing the story.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a Kindle as well. It doesn't have to necessarily be a book. Lange, you always say the same thing.
Oh, yes, certainly. Yeah, no, but that's a beautiful thing. And I think that is one thing, one way of actually connecting with your child, just so that you really pave a way that will actually enlighten them to become proactive readers in the future.
You're a very voracious reader, Lionel. Were you read to by anyone, or did you have your parents around, really? Or?
No, actually, I was raised by my grandmother, so the whole love of reading or education just came at a later stage when I actually evaluated my own standing point to simply say that I wasn't actually equipped to really be proactive or be competitive in the market. So I took it upon myself to really educate myself. Mm. So that's
Martha, were you read to as a little one, or did you not get that opportunity?
I didn't get that opportunity, only that our grandparents were reading, were doing storytelling.
Yes.
Yeah. And lots of folk telling, because of we grew up fearing some of the stories that they were talking about. Mm. But opportunity of getting a book in front of my hands with my mom or my grandparents, I didn't have that opportunity.
Yeah, it's a great shame, isn't it? But things are changing due to people like we have in studio today who are giving children that opportunity. Shall I know that Crawford has a wonderful library. You're very blessed to have that filled with books. Do parents make use of it?
I think that they do, and I think that the children themselves go into the library once a cycle to receive books and to read books. I think that the parents do. They're very keen on reading with their children. And as I said, I know that Mem Fox says read 3 times a day. Well, that's almost impossible. But to find the time, spend that time. Younger children, the books take maybe 10-15 minutes. Spend the time discussing the pictures. The illustrations are so magnificent.
Yeah.
They're works of art. I think of offhand of the Winnie the Witch series, where Corky Paul is the illustrator. And those pictures are amazing. They really are. And they themselves can generate conversation where the children and the parents can make use of the vocabulary that they've been reading in the book and expand on that.
One question I want to throw out to Lionel and to you, Shal, and to Martha and whoever. There are a lot of books like Rapunzel, The Girl with the Blonde Hair. Can a black child identify with that, or can she enjoy the story as though, yeah, like?
No, certainly, yes. It's just all about really connecting with the character and really using your own imagination to create your own drama within your mind. And in most cases, what really reading does, it just really expands your imagination to really start becoming a proactive thinker. And you start really becoming creative in as far as making sure that you've got your own characters, and to really make it a point that you connect those characters with what you are actually reading on. So it doesn't really matter what the book is all about, but as long as you are reading and you can really expand your mind.
What's come up on social media is one of our moms wants to know, even though my child can read a book himself, should I still read aloud to him? Yeah, what's the answer to that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You must continue reading for as long as you possibly can.
Mm. Until the kids push you away and say, I've had
until
enough.
They say, I can do this on my own now.
Yeah. But even though they can read, you just keep reading because they enjoy that warmth and the sound of your voice and the intonation. And
well, I have children. I worked with children last year who were 9 turning 10, and we read they had the book Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by Roald Dahl.
Yes.
And we never ever, I did have permission from the parents, but we never ever sat down to read that book without a slab of chocolate. Ah. And it was just one.
I don't know how good that is.
No, it was just one piece of that slab. Oh. And it just created so much enjoyment. Oh. And the children absolutely loved it. Every time I took the book out, and they took theirs out too, and they followed me, and we read together. It was absolutely wonderful. And that's another thing. Shared reading is read with your parents and share the books together.
I just want to mention one thing. I've met your son, who's an intellectual of note, and he obviously got it from you having read to him from the minute he was nothing. Yeah.
I did indeed, and I now have grandchildren, and they live overseas. I'm going to visit them soon, and my 6-year-old grandchild phoned me the other day and said, Granny, don't forget to bring me some books.
Oh, lovely. Your son, great. Gary, enters all the quizzes. He's a mine of information. If you wanted it, he's your phone a friend kind of guy.
He's my phone a friend.
And he got it from having listened to the books. If everyone would understand, it's so simple.
It is.
Chris, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, the question about what books people can relate to, and whether Rapunzel is appropriate or not. For me, the question almost becomes irrelevant if people have choice, if kids have choice, because they're going to choose something that they align with. And who are we to be judgmental about what is or not going to work? Provided that people are getting enjoyment, provided they're having their imaginations enlightened and inspired and ignited, then that's what matters.
Yeah. There's a wonderful, is it a foundation that it's called Field of Dreams Foundation.
Yes.
And in studio today, we have the ops director, or you head of operations.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the Field of Dreams, tell us what it is.
Well, it's a children's center that is serving a community. We're very fortunate. We are close to Hartbeespoort Dam. We're right opposite a community that is far away from everything. So we're in the fortunate position that we can accommodate the entire community in terms of what kind of services they need and how to help. And when it comes to the books and the reading, we have a children's center. But it's a learning center as much as what it is playtime and fun time. Mm-hmm. What happens there is that we definitely know that very few can read. None of those kids, I think, have ever had their own books. So also with Chris's help and a lot of other donations, we've got a lovely library which we're now developing into having reading sessions in the morning and in the afternoon. I feel quite emotional about it, actually, because the important thing
is... We'll all get teary here. We're all emotional about this.
And you're allowed to.
One of the things is really that struck me is that the parents, most of the parents can't read, and they struggle with writing. So as an individual, And what we sit there with, there's nothing conventional. We've got to be creative. Mm. And I've figured out that the more creative we are as a service provider to this community, the better we can integrate that gap, Shelley, that you spoke about, if parents and what you spoke about, if the parents don't read to the kids, some might not know why it's necessary. So we're coming up with creative ways in including empowering the parents to become involved with the kids in terms of reading.
Lovely. Yeah, love that. Yeah.
Bravo. Mm. Bravo, because that's what we need.
In case people that are listening, and usually they've downloaded the podcast, if they want to look at the website, it's called fieldofdreamsfoundation.org.za. fieldofdreamsfoundation.org.za. You've got to have a look at this.
It can be either that or it will be fodfoundation.co.za.
FOD. Okay. F-O-D. Yeah. How many kids come to your place every day?
Well, we actually only opened in end of August last year, so we're only at 168. The ages are between 2 and 17, so it's quite a variety. And then the people, we have wonderful women who are volunteers from the community, so we broke them up in age groups, which is really, coupled with that, the volunteers don't really know anything about education. So it's a learning progressive learning process altogether. One of the things that we've currently started, we've got a once-off project. The founder of this place, Lydian Hunt, she's going to
tell us about her. I know there's something, she climbs mountains or something.
That's it.
Lydian Hunt, H-O-N-D.
Yes,
yeah, tell us what her story.
3.5 years ago, she climbed Everest in order to raise funds to build this particular center, and which is, it's beautiful.
Where is Lee today? Because we should have had her here.
She's right around the corner.
Okay. Well, we'll get her. We'll get her back.
In April this year, Lee is running the Marathon des Sables, which is between the 7th and the 17th of April. It's the most grueling foot race on earth. And she's doing that to raise funds to build a clinic. Now, what we came up with to piggyback basically on what she's doing is that we decided to run a marathon of skills. So Lee is going to run 251 kilometers in 7 days through the desert. We are going to train 251 people in 7 days.
Wow. Yeah, it gives you cold shivers, doesn't it? Yeah.
Beautiful.
So we've got a couple of skills. We've selected 3 skills, which is first aid. Anybody can use that. And then in order to create sustainability, coupled with that people start reading up a little bit and come use our library, is basic carpentry, where the people will learn to make a vegetable box. And then the third skill is, how can I plant what to sustainably feed myself from this box for my family?
Wow.
In the community. And we're hoping to roll that out as well.
Yeah, what happens if a little kid is black, he doesn't speak, or do they speak English from that community?
Very few.
So maybe Shelley can answer. Someone needs to explain to me, when you read to them, do they kind of understand what you're reading about, or... Who knows this one? Lines?
No, you kind of like have an idea. But there's when it comes to reading, there is another language which is more of a spiritual thing, where you connect with the person who's actually illustrating or reading for you. And that is basically the power of it. And most people do actually connect with it. And in some cases, you'd find that there are interpreters who actually do their whole narrative in the language that other people can actually understand. So
is anything interpreted, or how does it work in your case?
Yeah. We do a combination. We would read in English and also tell the story, what the story is going to be about, and everybody is encouraged to animate, as what you said, use a lot of animation.
Yeah. Shell, is that workable? Are we getting maximum out of that, or have you got any ideas of how it can be improved?
I think that one's voice
can help the expression, the expressions on the face. The children are listening, they're watching, they're waiting. I think that that can help. But that was a question I wanted to ask earlier, is we heard about song, we've heard about folk tales, telling stories. And I want to know, where are these stories? Where are they in the written form? I know we get a few of them, you know, how the zebra got its stripes. And but some of those stories are lost in translation because the beauty and the expressiveness of the language isn't always coming through from the original language. And I want to know, where are the authors? Where are the writers? Who's writing these stories that your grandmother told you? I think it would be so wonderful to be able to utilize those and to be able to read those with the children in their own mother tongue.
Yeah, are there enough books in African languages that are coming through the system? Yeah.
Currently, there are African writers who actually want to go back to start writing African stories. But in most cases, you realize that there's not many of them. And in most cases, they don't really go out to really promote themselves. And that is the tragedy of it, because in most cases, their history is never recorded. So how do you bring something that is unrecorded to the table of knowledge? And you'd find that as years goes by, people tend to really no longer become interested in that story. And they never really share it with the other people. But with books, whatever is written, it gets to be lies in the book. And if one gets hold of the book, they can actually read it for themselves. But with storytelling, that's where the danger comes in, which is quite unfortunate. Actually, what you're simply raising, it's a very valid question. We need to.
Yeah, Tad, you wanted to add something?
Yeah. In Japan, old days, yes, we used to be storytelling countries. But we are now book reading countries, there's a gap. And, you know, when you see the small children, like, you know, 5, 4, 5, 6 years old, they are also facing these changes from storytelling, but they can't read and write. So they listen to mothers or, you know, the elders' talks. And then grade 1 to 3, they start to learn how to read and write. There's some of this, there's a middle of this area, there's a way to cover up. That's the reason that lots of publishers make a big picture books with a full of the pictures, right? And small letters. And the parents, teachers show these pictures and tell the stories. And this is a function of storybooks, a big size. And I think if we make these big size storybooks with African themes, maybe it may come to the heart of the children and the parents. Even the parents might know the stories of their own, you know, the ancestors. So seeing the pictures, they can tell the stories of the ancestors with their own value and you know, their feelings. So I think I like to discuss with something publishers how to promote this African theme picture books.
Yeah, absolutely. A great idea. Let's just talk to our researcher, Benji, for a moment. Benj, we have a wonderful array of people in our studio today. Each one has got something to show. Can you tweet out the buses that Tad has brought in from Japan, the bookshelves that Chris has donated, and the books? The foundation also needs pictures out. Martha's school. Everyone, Shelley's ideas. Can you get this out?
Yes, with absolute pleasure. And it's such a privilege to be in such great company. And everyone here, as it's been said, are doing such great work for children and reading and learning. So well done to everybody. Yeah, very good stuff. Amazing.
Now, this is all behind the scenes, Benj. I don't know if anyone knows about this. I didn't know about Sapezi and their buses from Japan until I met Tad. Chris does wonderful work. I read about it recently in the Star, but it's also quiet. I mean, no one knows. The foundation, people are climbing mountains, literally, in order to climb mountains in South Africa for our children. Martha's changing lives for over 1,000 children. Shelley's come with passionate ideas about how to read aloud. Is this getting out there? That's all I'm begging you. Just get it out there. Yeah.
No, definitely. And the more people that see it, the better, because then we make a bigger difference in many, many kids' lives. So it's amazing. Great work, guys.
Chris Dykes of the Bookshelf Project. There's one thing I want to talk to you about. You're also in business. And you also, I want you to promote your business quickly, if you wouldn't mind telling me in a minute what you do.
So we basically help companies sort out their BEE strategies. And in the process of helping them, we get donated money through their social funding to drive our bookshop program, study skills programs, public speaking programs, etc. We also get funding to drive our entrepreneur program. We run workshops with entrepreneurs coming from all kinds of backgrounds.
Are you doing training as well?
Training, coaching,
training
development.
Training important. Is that for kids or for adults?
No, these are entrepreneurs.
Entrepreneurs.
When it comes to training, we would do, like, for example, a study skills workshop.
Yeah.
One of our partners, for example, is the Tomorrow Trust, who's been doing work for many, many years in working with kids coming from disadvantaged backgrounds. And we support them by running study skills workshops every single year.
What's the name of your business?
Infinity Learning.
Okay, we can Google that. Infinity Learning. I also would like to thank Crawford Schools very much. Shelley Aronson had to speak to the principal who gave her the green light to be here. Can we thank him publicly? Yeah, very nice of him to let you go, because the kids need you.
Thank you, Gordon, for allowing me to be here this afternoon, and what a privilege it has been. Thank you.
Yeah, we've privileged kids, a lot of us at Crawford, and they need to hear this so that they know that not everyone has got what they got. Yeah. To you, Madam Martha, the principal of a school that's got 50-odd children in their classes, good luck to you. We're digging deep to help one another in this country. I really believe that.
Yes, yeah. I do.
Yeah, good luck with your school.
Thank you.
Tad, well, you know what you've got to do. You've got to bring in busloads of buses. We're waiting
more
for
more buses,
that.
More books, yeah. And more schools, more children with more teachers.
Yeah, I mean,
that's our motto.
It would have been very simple for you to, after you left Sony as the boss, just to reside and go and live in Cape Town on the beach. Instead of you making a hell of a difference, isn't he, Lionel? It's marvelous.
Certainly, and yeah. He's such a great ball of energy, and for whatever he's doing for the country, it's just brilliant, and we really thank you from the bottom of our hearts, and keep on doing the great work. And to everyone who actually came here, thank you so very much for the work that you're doing, because you are changing the country for the better. And how better can you actually do that by actually empowering the young ones and making sure that they use their creative minds to really do something positive? Thank
you. Your happiness, I think we all stand by the adage here, happiness consists in giving and in serving others. And Shelley Aronson's got not a bus full, but she's got quite a few books. Tell us quickly about them, Shel. You've got a minute.
I've just pulled these out of a bookshelf, and on behalf of the school, I'd just like to donate these to whoever wants them. Some of them are for children to read on their own. Some of them are lovely storybooks. Yeah,
can you tell us quickly what you got? Snakes and Ladders, I see there. And
these are a few reading books.
Yeah.
At different levels, written by some very well-known authors, Julia Donaldson, Michael McPurgo, Anne Fine, just to name a few.
We're going to take a picture of you handing over. Maybe we can split it between whoever. And many thanks to Crawford for donating this.
Oh, bravo.
You have been credited for having donated a lot of books. I think, Chris, you said
that. Oh, yeah. When we first started, Crawford in Sandton was one of our main benefactors. You know, there's multiple schools, for example, Saheti, Bishop Bavin, Crawford, just to name a few, who have really been the lifeblood of our program, because without the books being donated to us, there's no way that we would have been able to donate as many books as we have. I mean, so far we're probably at around 25,000 books.
Wow.
And in this year, in 2017, we're hoping to do at least that, if not more. And it really comes from the hearts of people that are generous enough to say, I've benefited from the story. My heart is lighter and brighter, and I'd love to share the story.
Yeah, that's the voice of Chris Dykes of the Bookshelf Project. Have a look at it. You're on Facebook and on the net.
Yeah. The company itself is called Infinity Learning, and that's where we run most of our social media from. So it's the Infinity Learning with the orange logo.
Yeah. Benji, if you wouldn't mind inviting for next week the lady who climbed Mount Everest. I'd like to talk to her about that.
Yeah, Dan, I'll get those details 100%. Great stuff.
She deserves – she's climbing mountains for us. So, yeah, I want her here. Good. And to you, Martha, thank you. Shelley Aronson and Tad, thank you very much. It's been a great show. I think it's U.S. First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy. She once said that a love of books is the best way to enlarge a child's world. And but for many children in South Africa, this would not be a reality if it wasn't for people like yourselves. Many thanks to all of you. And we look forward to talking to you again, all of you, to catch up. Tad was here a year ago. In a year or so, we're going to catch up again. Thank you to our teachers and principals and all the rest.
My pleasure.
Wonderful. Good. Thanks for the opportunity of being here. We really appreciate it.
It's been a great show. Thank you very much.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.